What's up, you guys? Hit that like button, click the bell, subscribe, and all that nonsense. Oh, God, I'm a terrible human being. But welcome to the TLG podcast, Zwei Null. This is my amazing German accent. My name is Jagris, and I'm joined, as always, by my lovely co-host, Spiro. How's it going, Spiro?
Hello, everyone. Welcome. Yeah, I've got some things to discuss today. And also welcome to our guest, which is going to be Spivey, or aka Dark Kevin XXXXXXXXXXXD. And also Bantonio Banderas.
AKA Bowman, because apparently everyone in Gwent has two names, at least.
When you've been playing Gwent for long enough, you know, you need to have a new identity.
Yes, it's the new meta. Everyone's adjusting. Vitalik, Tailbot, Tobliat.
And then he was like Vitalik or something? Was that not a thing in the Call of Players?
Yeah,
this is a season 3 meta. Everyone just changes their names.
Yeah, Big Kukuruzina made it first and everyone else jumped on the train.
Don't forget about Harry Potter.
Yeah, he's been slacking. Harry Potter has been slacking. I'm still waiting for Cedric Diggory. Wait, was he Cedric again already?
Was he? I thought he became Voldemort. Never mind. No, he was Malfoy, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was Malfoy.
He certainly didn't exhaust all of the names in the Harry Potter universe. So,
Spivey, you need to shout so people can hear you. Apparently,
Who does?
But speaking of
my volume, hello.
But speaking of Amanda,
you just have to scream.
I mean, to me, you sound fine.
Yeah, you sound fine to me as well, but apparently to the stream, you're just a quiet boy in a dark world doing Kevin things.
Yeah.
Speaking of, right, let's get to the meta report. Spiro's like, he's got this transition ready. He's like, we're going to segue into talking about the meta. But speaking about the meta...
I don't remember speaking about the meta. Can we clarify that?
Yes, we already speak about the meta. The TLG Metropole, which just released, I think, like an hour ago or something, if I'm not mistaken. Been just right off the press. And yeah, we can go through it, I guess, starting off with the tier one. Do you want to start the tier? Which way do you want to do this? Want to start at the bottom, work our way up, or top, go down?
We always start top down, so let's go bottom up. Let's start with the trash.
Switching it up.
All right. Tier three, Squirtle. I mean, I can't deny that one for sure. Squirtle. I don't know. It just doesn't feel like it got good enough tools to keep up with everything else since the latest expansion. Like, the only thing they really got is Sorcerer's Door with Thunder, but the rest of the cards just... I don't know. You haven't really felt like they've gotten the same sort of treatment as the other factions.
I mean, we saw some...
I'm pulling up the faction right now. Like, what did they even get? Are they got Francesca, right?
Yeah,
they got Francesca, and that was quite a sad card to get, I must say. Hasn't really been that impactful in the meta.
Imagine Francesca being unimpactful.
Right? I mean, Avalok is neutral, right? That's not
Skeletal used to run Avalok when, you know, back in the day, and now that he's actually above curve, it just makes sense.
Yeah. I think he saw play in tournament 2 in an Redea elf list, or I might be mistaken. But yeah, definitely a good elf for Skeletal to play.
Yeah. I mean, we did see some Squirtle in the qualifiers, the recent top 16, but it was for people who were going for a very control-heavy lineup targeting Kelly lists, right? If you're going to go for control, Squirtle's not a bad shout for that. Mm. You can do a lot of control cards and then things like Gord, for example. So, like, in terms of the tournament meta, I guess it's not completely out, but in terms of the ladder meta,
Yeah. I mean, we did see a couple of people bring this or bring some kind of Squirtle gift deck to tournaments, mainly because of the fact that it has a decent matchup into Nilfgaard, and quite often people do want to have like the targeting strategy in mind, and sometimes obviously Nilfgaard might be the pick to be targeted. But outside of tournament, on ladder, playing in a favorite myself, I must say it does feel a bit weak and against too many of the other factions, and it just struggles. Squirtle just feels like it's the sick faction right now.
Yeah, I kind of have to agree. The list we have on the snapshot, it looks pretty much like the one Redraim created, I think.
We have a rock slide instead of the Nick's, I think, right?
Yeah, it's our list now, guys. We changed one card.
We changed the card, that's now our list, yeah. And Redraim, played 165 games with it and stopped at 2500. So if Red Dream can't make it work, I think the faction might just be a goner this season.
Yeah, I could only get to 2500 as well, and I just couldn't get higher than that. It just felt very, very bad. But yeah, I mean,
in his defense, that was early in the season, right?
Yeah,
2500 on week one is there are reasons why it's a little easier because you can farm some surprise value, but it's generally harder. The inflation.
I mean, I must say though, the Source of Doble Thunder is actually a nice addition to the deck. I personally underrated this card a lot when I first saw it. I thought it was going to be just getting answered, but I mean, if it gets locked, you can purify it. And most decks, the way they're answering this is with locks and whatnot, and you can purify it and it just basically becomes a forest protector for five provisions in a way, and it's actually pretty damn good. But just not enough to single-handedly carry the faction enough, it feels.
And speaking of things that feel bad, Ploggers.
Oh boy.
Why are we even putting this in the meta report? I'm disappointed.
Because
enough.
It sees play. People play on a ladder. That's the thing. It sees plays. I don't think it's very good. You're relinquishing complete control of the game to RNG, but I mean, people do play it.
People love to clog, right? People love to clog, and everyone hates being clogged, but some people like to clog.
You know who loves to clog? The Dutch.
But, yeah.
Sorry. Someone want to have an opinion about this list?
I see on the Snapchat we've got the Renew Kingslayer list. This version is obviously a lot more difficult to deal with. It basically kind of tells your opponent if you somehow manage to deal with it once, good luck dealing with the second time because there's a Renew and it can be awkward. Like, the thing is, it's not about just running the answers. It's about drawing the answers. That's the thing about cloggers, is that your opponent might run Heatwave, your opponent might run Purify, but they might not draw those cards. And if they don't draw those cards and you clog them, they're never going to draw those cards for the rest of the game. That's kind of how the deck works, right? It just hopes your opponent misses out on its key answers in round one, and then it just completely stuffs your deck up with garbage, and then you just never get a chance to draw those cards again.
Yeah, definitely not nice to see that clock still remains a thing in this meta. It's just not pleasant to queue into it on blue coin and then missing out on cards. Also, the Blightmakers are a nice new tempo abuse and thinning tool for the deck. But I mean, luckily other factions also got cards to keep up with it. So it's still just kind of a coin flip if you get abused or not. It's very binary as always. That's why we put it in tier 3. It's nothing world-changing for the meta, and probably won't see play past 2.6 later in the season.
Also, can we just appreciate whoever wrote this part of the meta report? The strengths include the damage you deal to your opponent's mental health makes up for the lack of points. And the weaknesses include not recommended for new players, you won't get any GGs, lowering your income of the precious scraps and ore. I think that actually accurately sums up this list in a lot of ways.
Yep, pretty much, I must say. Grish hit the nail on the head with the write-up this time, as always. Definitely a deck where you're not going to get much GGs. People aren't going to like you very much. If you're looking to make some friends, probably don't play this deck.
Mm-hmm. And if we're continuing going up the list, then we have to start with the lowest rated tier 2 list. So 3.75 stars. Why do we have quarter stars? At this point, you may as well just rate out of like 20.
Yeah, I mean,
you know,
there's some times where a deck is not quite as, you know, just it's sometimes the deck's like not quite 3.5, but not quite.
Yeah, but like a star isn't even a shape you can easily quarter, right? It's easy if it was like 20, like fifths, you know, if it was fifths, it would be easier. But if you're going to go for a shape that's easily quartered, I feel like a star is not a good choice. We may as well rate out a square at this point.
Funny you should mention that. You may have a problem with these stars, but I've been asking for 3.825 for a while now, so you should be happy I didn't get my way.
No, I'm unhappy with this whole star rating system. I'm going to write to my MP and complain. That's what I'm going to do. So Carapace. It's the same as it's always been, except it has pigs in it occasionally.
Yeah, I mean, the Witch Apprentice, very strong card that's been added to the game. Not really changing Carapace up a whole lot. It sometimes can be nice. I've seen it been awkward too. It's not I don't know. How do you guys feel about Witch Apprentice and at least the Kelly deck? Do you guys feel like it's good enough? It's a little bit awkward at times.
Yeah, right? It's interesting, isn't it?
I guess that's what Tony Runner is one of.
Exactly. Situationally, it's more situational probably in Kelly than other Point Slam Monsters decks. But I think it's got the same insane ceiling.
Yeah, definitely has a crazy good ceiling. It's another, I guess, it's another threat. And that's the point of the deck, right? Is just output enough threats your opponent can't answer all of them, and Piggy can be another one of those threats in the right circumstance. And other than that, though, the deck is exactly the same. The only thing is the meta around it has changed quite a bit. So although the deck has remained pretty much unchanged, it's performing a lot weaker right now, which is why we have a 3.75, because just not really keeping up with the top tier meta decks at the moment.
Especially with lockdown in meta, though, right? Like when you have locks and stuff in meta, at least Carapace, it does have the veil, but you only have, what, three of those to apply, and you can't apply it to series. So when a lock deck, for example, which has locks whenever it wants, is considered tier one, I feel like these sorts of lists that are reliant on things like Keltalis, the Nethril, for example, the Beast, those cards, if there's locks around it, makes it harder for this deck to do well.
And the fact that lock deck is running Vincent this patch, he fell out of favor right in recent patches, so that's a pretty scary threat for Carapace.
Yeah, for sure. The Vincent is so devastating. But I mean, Carapace used to have an okay matchup against Nilfgaard because they only had really one removal, which was Invo. After that, it's quite hard for them to actually answer things. Whereas now, Nilfgaard has Vincent as well, which is game changing for this matchup. And it's not just that, it's Syndicate also does pretty good against this deck. Like, Syndicate just has so many tools and so many answers for so many different things that it's like Syndicate could do very well in this. And when the deck is bad against both top tier meta decks, that's a bit of a spooky situation to be in.
The deck, like, Kelly saw a lot of play in tournaments where you could easily ban Nilfgaard because what you said earlier, like the Vincent is just devastating. But it's kind of funny that if you queue into one of the Northern Realms lists, which are Devotion, the deck is still like super strong, and Northern Realms has little to no answers to it.
Yeah, the Northern Realms matchup is at least still good for Keltalis indeed. But yeah, pretty much just it's a deck that's still around mostly in tournaments. I don't see it much on ladder. I think it's way more popular in tournaments than on ladder, as Spivey mentioned, that it has some matches in tournaments that it can still do well in, but overall, a lot worse than it used to be.
Yeah, and it's worth talking about tournaments a little bit because the top 16 was so close to the patch and the new cards. I think the tournament meta hadn't really settled when the top 16. So you saw some Carapace. And you also saw a lot of people targeting these sorts of lists with, you know, very control heavy lineups going forward through to the final. Like, John Sally. I want to say John Sally. I think he got knocked out in the first round to the bottom and then went right the way to the finals. He was playing a very control heavy lineup, for example, as was whoever Aluha beat in the finals. I cast that game. That's the worst one. I cast that game. Like, I should remember
the
these things.
Winner's final.
Oh, Triss. It was Lord Triss.
Yeah.
And Lord Triss had a very control heavy lineup. That's the person I was thinking of. And he actually lost to Carapace. So, you know, sometimes you target someone and it doesn't even work. But yeah, moving on, we have Flurry, which was a list that Pieable brought to the tournament, and he did qualify through the loser's bracket. So make of that what you will.
Flurry is another list that I think is also more geared towards tournaments than ladder. I feel like on ladder, it's just significantly worse because, again, not really the greatest matchups against even things like Nilfgaard and Syndicate. But it has one really nice ability, which is on red coin. It can be pretty abusive. And when you have guaranteed coin flip in a tournament environment, it becomes a lot more appealing to bring a deck like this, which I think is one of the big reasons why Pyro Bro, also obviously it's a control type of deck, so it's good against, it has good matches against things like Keltalis and whatnot. Otherwise though, not an amazing ladder deck. It's still okay, but just not amazing for ladder. Not as good as tournaments at least.
And in terms of changes, it's one of the decks where the Megascope has highest ceiling, right? That was probably the change. Although in practice, you know, you would think
Avalak, I guess.
Yeah, and Avalak as well, exactly. Avalak's perfectly good cards to run here. But the, in theory, the idea of having these, you know, 10-point megascopes on great swords is fantastic. And maybe in practice it's not quite so simple as that. But yeah, that was certainly one of the things that would make this deck more interesting now.
Yeah, it still just kind of lacks points, and it just gets outpointed by a lot of the decks the other decks on our snapshot here, which is not surprising, because this deck had a lot of removal, but the tier one decks they have so much stuff you want to remove, and just Flurry just gets to the point. It just can't remove more stuff, and so you have to rely on smorking with the likes of Coral and Burner. And in a deck without much consistency, that becomes a tough draw sometimes.
Yeah,
discard package is a risk.
Yeah, the discard package is pretty good. I mean, the problem with the deck is, as you mentioned, just like the lack of points is quite crazy. You can control your opponent's cards, and you can answer like all their threats, but at the end of the day, you're not really putting anything on your side of the board, and so many times, like, even though you stay on top of things, you're answering their cards, you're killing the Kashis or whatever, you still just don't have enough points at the end of the day, and it's just kind of the thing with this deck. I mean, like I said, there are that's why it's so much nicer on Red Queen, because you can really be abusive with the discard package. But other than that, just like a sheer lack of points really hurts it.
So moving forward, we then are going to go commando with Inspired Zeal Commandos for a little bit of Northern Realms. So, you know, blue, basically spawning blue stripes. It's a list that's been around a while. Roche making more blue stripes. Priscilla Pavetta cycling the blue stripes. We know the drill, right?
Yeah, I mean, the key difference with this one is that this is going to be playing Siege and it's going to be playing Devotion. So a deck that, at least from my impression, seems like quite a risky one. There are a lot of ways you can miss out on your key cards, and it's not just about missing out on key cards, also potentially missing out on cards the right times. But if you do end up drawing those cards the right time and you have everything, this deck could be really abusive with that Faultless, with that Siege, and so many things your opponent might not be able to answer.
Yeah, I have a slight hot take. This list is just on the verge as annoying as playing against Cloggers. Because you either get high rolled into the ground by them just drawing every single card in the correct order, and there's most of the time nothing you can do if they have the correct cards at the correct time. Literally nothing you can do. But then they sometimes just miss the cards, and you're like, wow, what an absolutely easy game. So I really don't like queuing into Inspired Zeal, just because it's going to be a high roll game and there's not going to be that much skill involved.
Yeah, I feel like the comparison with Cloggers actually sorry, Jack. I like the comparison with Cloggers that Spidey makes there, because, you know, just like with Cloggers, do I have my Neuromancy in my opening hand? Oh, I don't. I'm almost certainly losing this game. You know, Sableless, it's just the shoes on the other foot. It's, do they have their Roche in their opening hand, and then proceed the same way from there? It's kind of like like Cloggers, but the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely can feel quite bad playing against this deck if they like just get the Roche, they get the Faultless, they get the Defender, and you can't. There's just too many things that you just can't deal with, and then you lose round one, and then they play a Siege in round two, and if they draw everything in the correct order, it's incredibly abusive. But yeah, very, very strong if it draws correctly. If it doesn't draw correctly, the deck can sometimes fall apart.
And I will say Blue Stripe Commando's variants across the course of the like 4 years I've been playing Gwent, I have seen this low roll in tournaments so many times. Like, this is one of the decks, along with the discard package, that I feel like as soon as you get to a tournament, it just forgets how to draw cards. I don't know. Decks like this that are so draw dependent, you don't often see them on ladder, just because if they low roll, you know, you're completely forked. There's nothing you can really do in that situation. And I've seen that happen enough times that it's a fun deck to play, but I don't know, half the time you're going to find your cards, half the time you're not. So it's kind of a coin flip deck in some ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then moving on to the next deck, this is going to be Koshy a deck, which I don't know. this one is weird. This one is a weird one. It's sometimes like Koshy is an incredible amount of points. Like Caranthia Koshy as a combo is insane. The change to Lava recently, where Lava actually got slightly nerfed, but in Koshy it's actually a bit of a buff because now the Koshy spawns 2-point Lavas instead of one. A little bit of a buff for Koshy, and Koshy's an absurd amount of points. The combo is insane. And you obviously have other things going for this deck as well. So I know, Spybe, you've had a lot of success with this deck. I believe you climbed 2600 with it like a day or two ago. So maybe you can give us some more thoughts on this deck overall.
Yeah, so I played a lot of this deck in the beginning of the season when I saw Wanged playing with it. Didn't do well with it, deleted it. And then the qualifier came and Tailbot brought, I believe, Egern and Osril, which is a package some people run. I know that one guy in the top 10 right now is running it and got to 2.616 or something. But this is the list that I had most success with, and I just yoinked it straight from Nequist, which is currently in first place. It looks a bit janky on first sight, like Caretaker and Aguara, like you have then Dorigari, like you have double lock and double purify in a way. And I had 5 hours or so of complete molding. Like I did not get anywhere with this list, and then suddenly it just clicked kind of, and I understood the deck, and I had a 13 game win streak. I think there's a pretty steep learning curve in this deck. I watched Life Coach yesterday and he was like, I don't fall asleep playing this deck solitaire, but I think there's actually a lot think about, at least in the macro game plan.
Yeah, I agree. Knowing what decks you can outpoint in what duration of rounds with, you know, when you have the combo in hand, really hard. Like even doing the maths each turn about, you know, or what card playing against the deck, what card can they play, how much tempo does that play for once the Koshis are down, it's beyond me. I think it's beyond a lot of players to even bother trying, right? Like the number of points and the way that the number of points per turn grows is crazy. And so yeah, knowing the macro decisions, like Declan says, by knowing when, you know, knowing can you beat Nilfgaard if they have ball still, even down a card? Well, in some situations you can. And that's like a very hard thing to evaluate.
It is actually quite interesting indeed, because I've seen, like, just adding to that is, I've seen this deck actually manage to win long rounds against decks which you wouldn't think it should be able to win long rounds against. Like I've seen it beat Nilfgaard in a long round. I've seen it beat things like Siege in a long round. Obviously, again, you got to there's certain like tipping points, and you have to know what card you might need to get X or Y out of your opponent before that can be possible. But yeah, this deck actually can, if things go well for it, can actually stay in there long rounds even with some of the best long round decks in the game.
I feel like we get rid of one obnoxious insect-based monsters deck, and then another one just comes along to replace it. Like, I suppose this does have more skill involved in piloting than Vi. But honestly, we got rid of Vi, finally. And then CDPR is like, yeah, but what about Koshy, you know? Because who doesn't love bugs in Gwent?
Honestly, you say we got rid of Vi, but mark my words, Jagras. Vi is just sitting there lurking in the shadows, because the meta right now doesn't do very well for Vi, but it's sitting there waiting for Nilfgaard to get nerfed, waiting for the meta to adjust, and Vi will come right back to strike us again. Don't you worry.
I'm worried.
The other monster decks, the other monster decks, AQ and Vi, just are collateral damage to because of NR. Like NR just wipes the floor with AQ and Vi. So that's why they are not included in this meta report. And they also, no one plays it, not even in tournament.
Yeah. And then moving up on here, now we're starting to get to the big boy leagues with Syndicate starting to make its first appearance, Lined Pockets. Now, this is actually our lowest rating of the Syndicate decks we have, I believe. Even though, I mean, 425 is not a low rating by any means, but it is of Syndicate standards the lowest. And this is going to be a deck that's been around for a long time now. I mean, it's been like 3 or 4 months we've seen this Line Pockets deck. It was at one point like the strongest deck in the game. It got a little bit nerfed, and new tools were given to Syndicate where other avenues have opened up. But still a deck that is still Syndicate, still has the good cards, still is junior, still has so much power in it. What are your guys' thoughts on Line Pockets currently?
Tony, did you play it this season or did you just
I played it a little bit. I haven't played it much, but I did play a little bit in the beginning of the season. But yeah.
So this is a favorite amongst our Russian community members. And it can do well in the mirror if you run Parsi. And the control, I think, should be... Is it enough for Nilfgaard? I can't really tell. Like, I haven't really played this enough, and I don't see the appeal, really, from this list. But it sees a lot of play because...
it's better against Northern Realms. It should be better against
Northern Realms. Yeah. It's better against Northern Realms, of course. Yeah, like, you still have the drill, you have the brawl, the Philippa. The amount of control is just probably too much if this list secures a long round, which... But it is also... its greatest weakness, in my opinion, because if you break up some combo pieces or you get some removal out in a push in round two, like, I think this list can struggle if you just break up the combo pieces in an efficient way.
The interesting thing about the deck, though, right, is compared to when it was the Syndicate deck, compared to when the kind of non-devotion Line Pockets was the deck, and the game plan then was to slam Justice round one, a lot of tempo, probably win round one. Therefore, you could make sure that you could play your Cleaver and your Drill in the same round. I think the play style now has changed a lot, and you play much more passively round one, like other Syndicate decks, so that you have both Justice and Cleaver still to be bled out. Unless the opponent can bleed both of them out, the Drill is still going to drill you.
Yep.
That's the difference, right? You're going to be drilled unless you can get them, and you can't get them both out because once they play Justice or Cleaver, if you keep leading into that, you go down a card. It's guaranteed.
Yeah, right? Yeah. That's the thing about the deck that's sometimes scary is decks that can't beat in a long round. They sometimes face a difficult decision like, do I bleed this deck? Now, if you bleed this deck and they still have Justice, they can play Furco to Justice, defend the bleed, and then suddenly you're bleeding, you're up by like 20, 30 points, you're like, yeah, I'm gonna bleed this guy dry, and they drop a drill with full bank, and then suddenly they catch right up, and they go card up, and they keep their Cleaver for round three or something, and then you're very, very sad. So that definitely is quite scary indeed. Very strong deck. Not quite, in our opinion, as strong as some of the other Syndicate decks right now, but still... quite high up there, at least in high tier two, and a deck that has a lot of control, more control than I think any other Syndicate deck right now.
Yeah, and it's a list that showed up in the top 16 again with players going for this more control heavy lineups, those that were trying to target things that they could control, like Carapace, for example. Line Pockets was quite prevalent towards the end of the top 16, getting up and through the ranks, and it's a list that Pyreball ended up banning, I believe, a couple of times. Throughout the tournament, for example. So I don't think it's a list to turn its nose up just because, at the end of the day, it's Syndicate, and Syndicate is still good. And the control options, they're going to make you better against some stuff and worse against some stuff. And that's the trade-off you're making. So I feel like this is more of a tournament choice where you maybe are going for certain strategies rather than on ladder. Ladder, you may as well just jam some of the other alternatives because they're slightly better overall.
Yeah, I mean... It has some small bet, like against Northern Realms is one of the key matchups that's better against. I'm not sure if it might actually be better against Kashi too. I'm not 100% sure. But yeah, it's still just going to be a good deck overall. And then moving on now to a deck which we have seen so many times on ladder, getting very close to tier one now. We have ourselves some Siege, or as many like to call it right now, Foltus Maneuver. A deck which is... It just abuses its Foltus. When you have blue coin, you just absolutely can push people out of rounds like crazy with this Foltus. And it's just so obnoxious sometimes. Like, you go turn one, you play like AA into whatever, then you play Dumb Banners and you play Foltus, and then you boost it up, give it a veil so that your opponent can't lock it, and then you tell your opponent, good luck, I'm out. Bye-bye, have fun.
You seem triggered. Are you okay, Spiro? Did Foltus do bad things to you? Because that's the vibe I'm getting right now. This you didn't like is survive that. Thoughts?
The faultiest maneuver, yes.
Ivy is quite a connoisseur of the faultiest maneuver, I think you can.
Yeah, so yeah, in the beginning of the season, I wasn't the fan because it was always the same line when you were up against Pinsir. And then Gravish played it on stream and I watched him and he just had so much fun with it, and it's quite contagious when Gravish has fun for once. And so the default has found its way back into the deck because it's just very abusive. And the main thing is that Syndicate can struggle against said maneuver big time.
Yeah, if they effect.
Yeah, yeah. And if you manage to secure that long round three with first save for NR, with the siege, you get down your siege engines, you just bombard the enemy's board. It's just very abusive, especially on blue coin. And it's not even that triggering because you run a 4-point leader, but you always draw your cards and it's not a high roll deck like Inspired Zeal, for example. Mm-hmm. So there is some consistency to it.
You're going to have to say all that again because I was completely sidetracked by your cat. I was like, I can hear Spivey talking, but also there's a cat.
it also must be said, though, one byproduct of this deck is it leads to some very, very unhealthy mirrors, I would say. This mirror has to be one of the most frustrating mirrors because whoever gets blue coin, whoever wins round one, pretty much wins the game because first saying this mirror is so valuable. Being able to get your machines on the board before your opponent and then start bombarding them is kind of insane in this deck, or in this mirror, rather.
But isn't that the case in a lot of mirrors, right? Like, there's a lot of mirrors where the coin flip is going to be hugely impactful.
This one is extreme. This one is extreme. This one is like that times a million. Like, yeah. This deck is crazy when it comes
to it. It's always been damage engine mirrors, right? That's where it's been most extreme always in all of Gwent's history. And normally that's Northern Realms. They're the ones with the damage engines. And yeah, we've seen it before in Henselt mirrors. And it's just, it's, you think, worse Spirit now than it's ever been before in terms of a polarized match, coin flip matchup.
I mean, the only other deck that had this much first say abuse in the mirror was, I believe, as you mentioned, Henselt mirrors. I don't know if this is worse. It's definitely up there. It's if it's not worse, it's at least close or on par. But like, if you get first say with this deck, it's just insane. And this deck is also very consistent, so there's no hope of your opponent maybe missing out on siege or anything because you have a leader ability that guarantees your cards. So you should be drawing pretty well most of the time. And pretty much, you get first say, you open up with siege, you play your siege engines, and then your opponent does the same thing, and you just delete their board before they get to play their bombardments.
So the solution to that is you just don't play this deck because then you can never play the mirror. Right, there you go. Problem solved. I don't know why you're complaining, Spirit. Just don't play it.
Oh, that's a good.
You don't like it, just don't play it.
Do you guys remember the dwarf mirrors?
When
justice was a thing and the mercenaries? Oh,
yeah.
That's good, true. Good example. That's another example. That's a non-Northern Realms example that had the same thing. Yeah.
Very good. Pretty much these. Yeah, it's these damage engine mirrors are always going to be like that, I guess. Yeah, that is definitely it. Pretty prime example of the matter. Overall, though, very strong deck. It is, I think it's fair to say, this is probably the third strongest deck in the game right now.
Mm-hmm. Yep. In the tournament, a lot of people brought NR in various kind of different forms. You did have like these siege variants. Someone had a dandelion version on the go, I believe. And I think it's a list that has a lot of maybe like a little bit of flexibility in the way that you build it. I've seen, I think, a Vraxis version as well. So there is a little bit more flex in terms of the cards you can switch in and out. But overall, it seems to be a popular list, at least from the top 16. And I feel like between this Syndicate and Nilfgaard, those are your kind of three strongest factions at the moment, just based on the meta.
Yeah, I would definitely agree there. Now, moving on to the biggest, baddest decks in Gwent right now. Tier 1 time. First up,
these aren't bad decks. biggest goodest decks in Quest. Well,
baddest isn't like scariest as that kind of baddest.
Baddest to queue into, yeah.
No, honestly, the English language makes no sense at this point. By bad, you mean good, right? Yeah, imprisonment, right? That's where we're going with this. Nilfgaard.
Oh boy, everyone's favorite faction. Well, I mean, it's hard to talk about Nilfgaard without kind of just chuckling at how much people hate Nilfgaard. I mean, it's pretty much the deck that has been around in various forms, but one thing remains: Masquerade Ball. It is going to be a ball aristocrat deck, and with the new bronze tool Blightmaker, actually, I think having a massive impact in Nilfgaard, in my opinion. Blightmaker being absolutely huge for Nilfgaard currently. Because it just gives you the ability to have a strong round one. Sometimes you can play this, thin your deck. And that's the thing about Nilfgaard. It wasn't always the most consistent deck. You have Roderick, which is not the most reliable tutor in the world. And then there's also the fact that there wasn't really a whole lot of thinning. And now we've got Blightmakers that not only thins your deck, but it plays for 11 tempo. And then you also have Dead Man's Tongue, which thins your deck two more times. And also gives you the insight into what the order is of your cards, which is just crazy how much value that is for Nilfgaard.
Yeah, but it's bugged. It's not meant to do that. Like, yeah, it's currently under provisioned or over bugged, basically. Like, it is insane that it shows you everything because it gives you the consistency that you need. It means you can make decisions about the way that you play Blightmaker. You know, if you're not going to, if you're likely to draw into assassins, for instance, mage assassins, and you're not going to find your Blightmakers, then you can potentially use those as Dead Man's Tongue targets to manipulate the order so that you draw into better cards, right? That's part of where it becomes a bit insane.
And also is, you can set up your Kim and things like that.
Yeah, so there's a lot of flexibility in that extra information, but it is something that I would imagine will get adjusted in the next patch. We'll see.
Yeah, it will. I mean, it's still not a bad card, even when you take the bug away from it. Still not a bad card. Obviously, the bug just makes it it's even more crazy.
It's not just crazy. Like, it's just blatantly OP and broken. Like, Dead Man's Tongue in this deck is so broken because you can also just set up Joachim's for round three. I can't fathom how broken this card is. If you draw the correct cards at the correct time here, like your Blightmakers, your Dead Man's Tongue in round one, you guaranteed get out of the round or win the round, and then you're just in a long round with ball and all of your other good stuff by only spending 2 5Ps and one consistency card. It's crazy how good ball is this patch with these new additions to the deck.
Yeah, I think Spivey hit the nail on the head with that. And the thing is that Nilfgaard is a deck that if it gets round control, it is so scary because very few decks can actually beat Nilfgaard on a long round three. Nilfgaard has probably one of the strongest decks in the long round three. And with this new combo with Blightmaker and Dead Man's Tongue, is you can quite often actually win round one. And before, Nilfgaard used to have a very weak round one. Used to have, you know, it just didn't have many points. And it used to often have to pass and defend bleeds, and which could be awkward defending bleeds because you didn't know where your cards were, what order they're on. But now you have more consistency, you have more power, and you just have more control of the game, which just makes Nilfgaard so much stronger.
It is a deck, though, that it can be bled. You know, you're talking about that. So if you lose the round one and they bleed you, sometimes it can be really awkward with your aristocrats, for example. Let's say you haven't drawn into your Masquerade Ball. You're not trying to save it for whatever reason. You haven't drawn into it. You can almost get bled to the point of having to commit cards like, you know, Vincent, one of your aristocrats, Fergus, another aristocrat. Usurper, you might end up playing in round two. Admittedly, he's not an aristocrat till round three. But then you're left with, you only got a couple bronze aristocrats in there, right? You've got the Van Malenham Hunters and then the one seditious aristocrat. So I have seen, especially in tournaments, this get bled to the point where your Masquerade Ball, you don't really have the tools for it. Or in round two, if you get bled and you do commit the Masquerade Ball, but you just haven't drawn your aristocrats, because sometimes in round one, you may have committed a hunter for a lock or whatever. There's situations where that can be slightly awkward if you haven't managed to do your thinning, do your Blightmaker play, whatever, and you get to the point where you don't have the tools that you need because you haven't gotten to round three.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely can be awkward in round two sometimes.
But considerably less awkward than before Blightmakers and the Man's Tongue existed.
For sure.
And if you have them in round one, you just win round one, right? You're just like, here's, boom, 11 points and a Finn Medic.
Sometimes. not always, but very often, yeah. Or at least you force big cards to your opponent, right? Like that's I think the biggest thing now is that you're not always going to win round one, but you're at least going to, if you have like both Blight Makers and whatnot round one, you can very often force your opponent to at least commit some big cards that otherwise wouldn't have committed just to try and win round one while you're just dropping five Provision Bronzes and thinning your deck.
Oh, it's an absolute fiesta in the mirror though, right? Because if you don't draw your Blight Makers, if you have your Duchesses and Foreman, you just start copying their Blight Makers. And then if you both don't draw your Blight Makers, then sure, no one gets to do it. But as soon as they play a Blight Maker, they're basically just helping you out with thinning. And the thing is, if you do play an extra Blight Maker, it's all right, because you can always put Brath into the top of your list because he's a mage, get the construct, and it's still pretty spicy.
You know what I've found is the best thing to do in the mirror with Blight Makers. So you play the Blight Maker, you put a bad bronze on top of your deck, you bait your opponent to thinking you put like something like Masquerade Ball or a big gold on top of your deck, and they play Location and they steal that bad bronze from you. I actually managed to pull that off once. I felt quite good.
I've seen you do it, Spiro. I've not been successful in replicating that myself. I have to say.
You just cucked yourself, basically. Oh, I'm going to draw into a Emissary. That's a great card. The thing is, though, like the Cantarella version, I don't think is even the best version of the list.
Yeah, I mean, that's what our meta report says as well. So,
yeah, I mean, I don't know. There's it's a bit awkward, right? Like, it's not. If you put Cantarella Location, then that it's a very clunky combo. But at the same time, if you don't put it in, you've left with things like Vigo. To be fair, Vigo is also a little bit of a... It's just a weird slot, right? You have either Vigo or you got Bribery, and the slot itself is not... I wish there was something better to do, but there just really isn't. It's either... You either play Vigo or Fergus or whatever, or you go in and play Cantrell Location, which also has its own like clunkiness to it.
Yeah, we ended up with this list just because we also didn't really know what to do with the list. Ran in the beginning of the month, we ran Anna, but Anna has proven to be not ideal with Jackpot being a thing. And
yeah, and NR as well, can be really awkward.
Pincer. Yeah, exactly.
So then, go on.
Yeah, I was also just going to say that one of the main reasons, like of course Location Cantarella is still a very strong combo, but one of the main reasons it was strong before is because you didn't have convenient round one plays, you'd often find yourself slamming Yoke in round one just to survive, right? Or round two just to survive. So the ability to do it a second time was made a lot of sense. But now that you have other options to secure round one or the round two bleed, that's less of a thing.
Yeah, for sure. And then moving on to the Syndicate tier time. Now we're going into like the realms of borderline busted, or actually is busted, I don't know. But first up, we have Pirate's Cove. Now, Pirate's Cove is basically pretty much unchanged from last season. The only thing that really changed is Professor went up by one provision, and that's about it. Other than that, the deck is largely untouched, and obviously last season it was the strongest deck. Last season we had, I think, it's at 475 on the Metro Port. This time around it's gone a bit down to 4.5, but only because the Jackpot is now even stronger. But Pirate's Cove pretty much still, it's kind of weird. Like it feels like it's just a slightly worse version of Jackpot, but only very slightly, and just very, very strong still.
It's a 4.5. Oh, sorry.
It's fine. Like the 1 point nerf to Professor didn't really hurt Syndicate that much. And the list is still as broken as we remember it. Maybe it doesn't feel as broken because now this time around other factions actually got to a decent-ish power level to compete with the faction. Also, this list, if I'm looking at it, where are the faultest maneuver answers? I mean, you can do some cheeky stuff, but this list especially can struggle against faultest if you are on red coin as a Syndicate player. Also, imprisonment with its good round one, and just managing to secure the long round in some matches can be really good, even though I don't even think that the long round for imprisonment is that good into Pirate's Cove. But yeah, still the same list. Yeah, it's definitely close, but I think Syndicate can still win if they min-max optimally. But yeah, still the same old Cove, still pretty broken. Nothing much to add.
Yeah.
Basically what happened was CDPR saw this list and they were like, right, we've got bros, but what about hoes? Do you want to be bros before hoes, or do you want to be hoes before bros? Because now you have the choice. If you play Jackpot, then you're team ho. If you play Pirate's Cove between the Blenheims and the Borsodis, you're team bro. Oh, and so God. Now you can be either. It's 2021, you guys. You want to be a bro? That's fine. You want to be a ho? That's also fine. We welcome everyone here in Novigrad.
That's quite an interesting way of looking at it. I've never actually thought of it that way, but it makes a lot of sense, actually.
This is the way my brain works. Does anyone else have any comments on Pirate's Cove before we talk about Jackpot?
Not other than that, I mean,
only that this kind of sorry, just to say that this, like, Pirate's Cove deck, right, is played. Some people do play it with Jackpot as well, like a kind of very, or at least almost identical, right, just with a Jackpot leader, kind of a more mid-range Jackpot, and that's what I was actually
doing yesterday. I was playing like a Pirate's Cove deck with Jackpot as a leader ability. It did pretty well. The thing is, some people are at like very high Monster Syndicate with all kinds of weird janky decks. Like it almost feels like you can play Syndicate whichever way you want, and it doesn't matter. You'll get to 2600 anyway because the deck is just busted.
Does anybody know in chat? Does anybody know if somebody streamed Syndicate Salamander? Because I got cheese twice in a row yesterday, and I don't know why. The most janky list, just make it up the MMR ladder. Quite interesting.
I mean, that's Syndicate for you, right? Just pick some random cards, play the deck, win the game, pretty much.
I think in terms of Pirate's Cove and Jackpot, it's worth commenting that these leaders, they help you manage your finances in different ways, right? Because some of the difficulty in Syndicate is, you know, with Pirate's Cove, you have spenders whenever you want. You can spawn spenders that don't generate money, so you can control your finances that way. Whereas with the changes to Jackpot, what that does is if you over-profit, it turns them into boosts. So in both cases, your leader ability is helping you to manage and maximize the benefit of your coins, which is, you know, the core mechanic of Syndicate. And I think that's why these two leaders especially are the ones that we're seeing at the top of Syndicate compared to the other ones.
Yeah, I mean, Jackpot is kind of the fact that you can just not care about over-profiting. And it's Jackpot has so much flexibility. It's absurd what you can do with it. Like, in the hands of a player that knows what they're doing, you can just do so much. Like, for example, right, if you're worried about your Freak Show getting killed by Northern Realms Boiling Oil, you can get yourself to Horde 9, play the Freak Show, and then because it over-profits, because it has profit 2, it will then boost itself by 2, thus putting it out of Boiling Oil removal range. And you can do so many things like a Syndicate, or you can use your lead ability because you can overprofit the lead ability and then convert that overprofit into coin or into points. And you can use it to protect things like Siggy or things like an engine that you want to put out of removal range. And it's just so flexible and so powerful in that regard that it just makes Syndicate kind of unfair to play against in a lot of situations. You just can't really do much about it if the opponent is knows what they're doing and knows how to protect their stuff or keep their cards out of ways that you can counter it.
The plus side to that, though, is that it does reward knowledge, right, of your opponent's deck or good predictions of what cards they will play. Because, like you say, exactly, you say, Sperry, you can make your Siggy whatever size you need him to be to play around whatever cards you expect. So at least it adds some skillful play, even if it is placing
bad. Unfortunately, the downside is it leads to like a very little counterplay, and that's the problem. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this list is really strong. I remember at the beginning of the patch when we looked at the patch notes, reading what Jackpot is now, and I went like, nah, this is gonna be broken. And the meta took some time to adjust, but now if you play ladder, like every like probably like 70 to 80% of the Syndicate matches I queue against is with Jackpot. So people definitely caught on to it.
Yeah, and very, very strong indeed.
Yeah. I think part of the issue with the list as well is Wholesome Junior. He gives you 9 points of reach. Like, if you think about the history of Gwent, it used to be that 6 points was really hard to kill, right? 4 or 5 points, you had a lot of removal for. But 6 points, that was like the kind of safe spot, shall we say. And now it's like, oh, here's Wholesome Junior. So unless you're a 10, I can kill you, pretty much. Mm. So you got to be a 10. And there's so few ways of being able to deploy a card at that value in one turn, except for things like jackpot. You know, if you can obviously manipulate your coins and boost things to protect them. But I think that's part of what makes this list kind of insane. And bear in mind with Wholesome Junior, he then also has the ongoing ability of being able to destroy anything that's a three or less. So not only can he reach anything nine or below, but you can also then clear up any kind of swarm potential three or below. So it's just an insane card.
Yeah, this faction has so much flexibility. You have flexible removal. You have flexible ways to protect your engines. Like other factions, they don't have this, right? If you have a card that's at five strength, well, that card can die to five damage. Whereas Syndicate, they don't care. They say, oh, I got Freak Show. It dies to five damage. No, it doesn't. I got leader ability. I got excess coins. You just have so much flexibility. You have Freak Show can do, you want two damage, you have two damage. You want four damage, you want four damage. You want like 100 damage? Cool, I'll just activate leader ability and wipe your board with Freak Show in one turn, it's fine. you want to steal my engine with Philippa? Oh, okay, you can do that too. You want to kill my nine point Kelly with your junior? Go for it, have fun. Like, it just can do everything. Like, there's just nothing the deck can't do, pretty much.
Yeah, but it can't kill a 10-point Faultist. Like, when the Faultist comes down, you deploy the stats. The maneuver comes down. Not, like, even Horsen can't help you.
Oh, wow. Entire card in the whole game. Like, how many odd cards do we have? And you're like, but there's this one card. And you have to have the right scenario to be able to boost it up to 10. But, in that one-on-one situation, this is the... And this is, I guess, why this deck is busted. And... Yeah, it's busted. I'm not even going to pretend.
We haven't even touched yet on the interesting part, right? Well, the less obvious part, which is the passive flora.
Oh, true.
The hope part.
Well, yeah, exactly. Jagged, I guess, did touch on it. Yeah, touch on the hope. But that's interesting.
Okay.
Yeah, where you go. What do we think? So, do we think this is favored by some players, especially at the top, very high on the ladder?
Honestly, I don't even think it matters. Just play whatever you want in Syndicate and just win. It just doesn't matter. I don't actually think it matters in the slightest.
I guess it matters in a mirror, right? Like, the idea is you're trying to make the best Syndicate list because everything else is probably going to lose more or less. Like, Nilfgaard excluding, perhaps. Everything else kind of down the ladder. You play Syndicate, you're favored, more or less. So then if you're in that situation, you're building a list so that when you go into a matchup against Syndicate, you want to have the best matchup against Syndicate. So then the question is, does Passiflora provide you a better matchup against Syndicate than your alternatives?
I don't even know, honestly. From my experience, I managed to beat a lot of Passiflora versions with the mid-range version. I was watching various streams and I've seen a lot of mid-range versions manage to beat the Passiflora version. I think a lot of it just comes down to first say, honestly. I think it's just very much just at the end of the day, it's gonna boil down to very much who goes first in whatever round is the winning round or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because if you can assemble your ladies pretty quickly, like just the sheer amount of point generation that they create can, I guess, sway it, even with removal things like Wholesome Junior and Wholesome's Freak Show. But, I mean, is it even worth talking about the Syndicate Mirror? I guess it happens a lot, but Syndicate's going to win. I'm like, does it even matter Syndicate's going to win?
But yeah.
So,
go on. Well, I was going to say that if you're both running Passiflora in the mirror, then of course, then it becomes, as they were saying, first say is super important. If only one of you is?
Not important, honestly.
Still important, but not quite as important. But I think the main consideration is the effect that running Passiflora has on your matchup into Nilfgaard, being able to, namely, how the long round goes.
That is a good point. Right. Not just that, but you also have a Corkstein too, and Corkstein absolutely smurfing against Nilfgaard, by the way.
Well, two of these 7P cards, Corkstein and the Freak Show, they just clown so hard on the other good decks. Like the Freak Show against NR is absolutely devastating, and the Corkstein against Imprisonment can also come in very clutch. So yeah, kind of interesting that two 7P cards actually have that much of an impact.
Yeah, sure.
But so any
Yeah, maybe that's when you know that your faction is busted, when even the seven piece can carry you.
Yeah, the faction is in fact busted. Any thoughts just overall on the state of the meta, not maybe specific on the deck, but you know, how things are, how Syndicate shapes up versus the rest of the factions,
Honestly, I quite like the meta this time around. The only thing I'm not a huge fan of is obviously how overpowered Syndicate is. I mean, if you just bring that down a little bit, you bring Syndicate back in line with other factions, and then you like bring Scoia'tael up. I think the meta actually shapes up to be quite a nice meta, in all honesty. If Scoia'tael becomes better and Syndicate becomes slightly worse, then I think the meta becomes pretty good.
Yeah, also like I have fun with the game for once in a very long time. Feels kind of fresh again. I don't hate having to play to grind the ladder. It's really fun. And I don't know why, honestly, but it just feels good. I heard from other people like Specy hated it. Maybe this season doesn't reward the creative minds in the deck builder that much. But yeah, I quite like the environment right now when you don't queue into Zeal or Cloggers.
Small caveats. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I guess it's worth pointing out that because of this new patch cycle, right, we should have more new cards in, what, like just over a month? Is it every 2 months that the cards are coming out? Am I making that up?
2 months, yes. 2 months, new cards. Yeah,
So basically we get new cards, we get assumingly a balance patch, and then we get new cards again. So by that logic, hopefully going forward, the meta should be, if the future expansions are like this one, the meta should be regularly getting shaken up and then fixed. And I think that if it works properly, is a really healthy cycle to keep people interested in Gwent, and also to stop burnout at the high end, because I know that a lot of pro players, like, Gwent burnout is really quite a problem.
Yeah. For sure. I mean, it's definitely nice to see changes to the game and seeing new stuff to try experiment with and mix. Like, at certain points when the meta gets solved, a lot of games come down to when everyone knows, okay, this is the line you take against this deck, you do this needs to happen, you need to do this, and everyone knows every line, and then it becomes very, very hard to find like edges against your opponent, because every like average player on the ladder knows exactly all the lines, and it becomes quite tiring to play and just grind ladder and just but yeah, that's why when you shake up the meta, it definitely makes things a lot more fun, more new, interesting things to explore, and makes the clear lines less obvious for a while.
Yeah. And takes the focus away from just draw RNG for a while as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, that's a really good point. Like the consistency, this patch, really, really good. Like Syndicate, you normally draw your cards, you have some thinning, you have your bank, Northern Realms. Northern Realms, obviously. If you run the correct list, you have a lot of consistency. And then Nilf got two with the improved consistency. It just feels like you don't rage much over draws this season.
Until you play Koshy like
me. Until you're playing Koshy, I was just about to say.
Okay. Then, I mean, just hit the, yeah, just hit the lucky streak.
But yeah. Anything else to add?
Yeah, Mr. Bowman, I know you play unconventional decks a lot. Did you play all these meta decks this time around?
So normally, you are right, normally I do. I spent a lot of games playing Carapace, She Who Knows, at the beginning of the season, which, you know, so obviously without the Koshy package, without the actual points, why run the good cards, right? Just, you know, focus more on the relics and She Who Knows and keeping her alive, defender, things like that. And that, yeah, I mean, it was fun. It's obviously nowhere near as good as Koshy. Like, I climbed considerably more as soon as I swapped to try Koshy, but no, that was interesting. I do want to try and play Line Pockets at some point, but haven't quite got around to it yet.
Line going to be embracing his Russian lineage.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the thing though. At the start of the season, especially with the new patch, you could kind of get away with playing some jank because there's not an established meta. Like at that stage, it probably wasn't, the Syndicate had hit the jackpot and Nilfgaard were in prison at that point. So you can kind of get away with playing whatever. I think I played some like hyper thin Nilfgaard. Don't know why I did that. That was a bad decision. But you can kind of get away with it at that stage of the ladder. And then as time goes on, this is where you maybe have to settle a bit more and embrace your, I guess, Russian overlords if you want to play Lion Pockets, Bowman.
Yeah, oh, I was also playing some. I would say actually maybe a real deck, but not when I say real deck, I mean by my standards, was Precision Strike, like a Gourd, like similar to the Nature's Gift non-devotion decks, control deck with Gourd, right? But Precision Strike. So it's not like unitless, but with the new cards, with the new elves and just with, you know, a very big Gourd, but that doesn't get maneuvered quite as easily or etc. abused in those sorts of ways.
I mean, to be fair, these 3-point elves, if they pop off, they can play for a disgusting amount. No one plays Scoia'tael, and so no one really notices it, but...
Yeah.
I mean, they're basically Forest Protectors for 5 visions if they...
Yeah, and the other ones even. Both, and the other ones as well.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you have the gold cards, which are an absolute joke.
Yeah.
They're not the best. Does anyone have any closing thoughts on the meta in general?
Just positive, positive. If we can only hope that the future card packs will have the same effect.
Oh yeah, like last time I was around, I was quite tired, and I think I said that I hope that they go in the right direction and they know what they are doing, and it seems like they nailed it this month, for me at least, and I'm happy to see how it goes on in the next month. So yeah.
Fair enough. So it sounds like overall we give the meta report the Zvinal thumbs up of approval. So this meta gets a thumbs up. We're gonna start doing that now. I've invented that. So going on. Yeah. And then we'll all join in with the waving at the camera. Yeah, everyone. So we give it the TLG thumbs up. I don't know what makes this a TLG thumbs up, but we'll do that. And then beyond that, I guess the only thing we have left to do is thank you guys for coming and keeping me and Sphere company on the podcast. If you're listening to this somewhere, don't forget to subscribe. We're available on all the places that good podcasts are. I don't know what bad podcasts are, but wherever you can find a podcast, I think we're there. I don't actually know where they are. I'm just here, but who knows?
Thanks everyone for joining. Thanks Jackers for joining me as well. But yeah, hope you guys enjoyed it. And thanks everyone for watching. It was definitely nice to just get the Metroport out. It's been a while, but it's finally out, and hope you guys enjoy it.
Right, and now we say thank you, and then we smile and wave.
Ah, yes, my favorite part.